Past one store today that had the big M in the window that just kind of, you know, catches my eye every time I go somewhere.
I'm not super happy with that interaction because it's just kind of like an inevitable death.
It's just unfortunate that this is all precipitated by a card off the standard reserve list.
And hopefully, you know, some of them are wiping their brow saying, thank God that rotation is going
to
happen.
I've got a legacy deck I'm trying to brew as well, which isn't going very well, I will say that much.
I'm sending it out on the lake and shooting the flaming arrow at them as it's packed with cardboard that I don't want to see anymore.
We can never underestimate the amount of people who care nothing about the finance of Magic.
I mean, you have to be playing extremely suboptimal cards.
Stroke their villain mustache and twirl it up at the corners. Everyone is back from their life check-in duties, and this is another episode of Tryhards. Oh, you brave soul, welcome to episode 112. He's Matt Hurley, he's Brian Tibbetts, and I'm Sean Seacrest. Tonight on the cast, we go to Brussels and see what flexed its muscle. We'll head down to Orlando and see if the rising sun was hot enough to deter all other would-be champions. We'll figure out whether or not this current metagame is good for in-store buying and whether or not you may want to make an adjustment to the way you purchase your magic boxes in the future because of it. And I'll give some advice to someone who is already much more successful, popular, and frankly, probably better looking than me, and I'll feel good while doing it. Yes, it's going to be interesting. Oh, you brave soul. Let's kick off episode 112 of Tryhards. We kick it off each week with What Are You Drinking? I'm going to go first this week. This was a momentous day in the house. 10 years ago, when I started dating my girlfriend, she had a young son. She has two sons. The youngest was 8, and he celebrated getting to know me after we had been dating for a while by coming over to my then apartment and helping us decorate my tree by tying my tree skirt around him and twirling around with it and fluffing it out to entertain himself. He's 8. He was in dance his whole life. He actually did a pretty darn good job of it. Well, now he's grown up, and today he left for college. Mac, it's been great. Congratulations. But when you think about it, and you plan down the long road ahead, and you think, I like this person enough to stick this out and get back to it just being the two of us, today is that once again a renewed beginning, so to speak. So I'm in high spirits here. Here's to everybody who's been through a long run and a happy transition is on your hands. I hope you have one in your future. So I'm celebrating. You guys know I love Founders, whether it's the all-day IPA or anything else they do. Well, I went top shelf tonight and got some Backwoods Bastard to celebrate. It's one of my favorites, and we may have started celebrating at lunch today. So we'll see how this episode goes. Should be a good one. Matt, you and I let our hair down last week with episode 6 of Buy Hards. What do you got left in the liquor cabinet after that episode?
I'm drinking something normal today or tonight. Just some Old Forester bourbon. We had some champagne last night. We had some big life events ourselves. Got officially engaged yesterday. So we had a couple bottles of nice champagne. And yes, she said yes, you two, if you didn't hear the pre-show.
Mark it down. This week's intro music, Pachelbel's Canon in D, as we start to walk Matt down the aisle. Brian, what are you drinking tonight?
We are triangulating the signal this evening. We've got Louisville with Matt and Quincy with Sean, and I am not nearly in Galesburg. I am enjoying a nice kind of final family vacation up in Wisconsin, western Wisconsin. We're in the town of Stoddard, just south of La Crosse. And so what does it mean to be in Wisconsin? That means go to any place that sells New Glarus beer and buy all that I can afford. And so I am enjoying a beer called Stone Soup. It's a lager. Stone Soup, for those of you who don't know, like, the history behind the book, it's kind of like, you know, family didn't have anything, so, oh, throw this in there, throw that in there, throw this in there. It's American English and German malts. It's got Oregon, Washington hops. It's got a Belgian yeast. It's just this crazy, awesome beer that's kind of like internationality in my mouth. So I will be enjoying a few of these this evening.
That explains it. I couldn't figure out why your internet connection sounded so good and clean tonight. You're not at home.
I'm not at home. Ironically, it was funny. We were walking around La Crosse. One of the things we did on Saturday when we got up here was go to the Irish Fest. which was in downtown La Crosse, and we parked and we're walking along the river, and I was like, oh my God, that's CenturyLink's headquarters. I was about to go pound on the door and just start shouting at no one who was working, like, you owe me an internet connection that actually works all the time. So yeah, a little ironic that that's where they're based, and takes me to come all the way up here to have a decent connection.
Have you found any historic or famous LGSs that you've taken the family to while you're on this trip? Because Wisconsin's known for a great scene, usually especially limited.
You know, one of those things where past one store today that had the big M in the window that just kind of, you know, catches my eye every time I go somewhere. But I had to make the left turn to make it down to the pizza place we were going to. So, you know, I can put it off for a weekend. I'll have plenty of magic coming up this coming weekend.
So that takes us up to what magic we played this weekend. Brian was on the road. Did you get to play anything before you left?
Didn't get to play anything. I had a lot of conversations with a lot of Galesburg guys who were putting decks together. This is kind of like PPTQ season, it seems like, for Modern, and there's a ton of grinders who are going to things yesterday, today. A lot of top eights from the Galesburg guys, but no wins, unfortunately, out of that top eight. But I loaned cards out like a madman, which is I seem to do about this time of year. By my count, my engineered explosives have seen play in my decks twice this year, and in other people's decks 16 times. So, you know, that just goes to show you they're getting their mileage out of them. So didn't get to play, but have really, really good conversations about things and the updates on the metagame around the Iowa, Illinois area. It's pretty fascinating what people are running in Modern.
Matt, what Magic did you play this week?
Got to stream a little bit, and that was about it. I didn't really get to play much Magic. I was busy with other things and just trying to catch up on some work after being on vacation for so long. That was a big one. Played a little Moto, played Jund Dinosaurs a little bit, and I was actually playing on drafting. I think it was Thursday night, but for some reason, M19 isn't that popular as far as drafting, and not enough people showed up, so I just decided to head home anyways.
Well, it looks like I'm going to have to hold down the paper Magic portion of it anyway. Got up to the LGS twice this past week, once to help a buddy of mine test who is going to be playing in an upcoming Legacy tournament this Saturday. I now know, as I text you guys, the entirety of the possible playbook for Blue-Black Reanimator against Leylines. I'm the Blue-Black Reanimator player. He's the Leylines player. Those games get weird. Any game in which you're playing against Leylines is probably going to get weird, but that was interesting to do. And then for FNM, continued the Jund project. My build's still a little bit different than Matt's. I think about 8 cards different, but things performed, I thought, as they should. Lost to my absolute worst matchup, which is God Pharaoh's Gift. Matt, I don't know how it's fared for you, but Blue-White God's Pharaoh's Gift just continues to take my lunch money from me every time I get matched up with it. So I don't know if it's worth putting in the hours to try and overcome that, what with rotation coming up. And honestly, I don't know when I'm going to get to play any more serious a tournament than FNM at this point, with my schedule really picking up as we head into the fall. I hope your Magic was fantastic and you get to play everything you want whenever you get the opportunity. It's time for a Patreon raffle, guys. Last week on By Hards, Episode 6, Matt and I teased a little bit of the swag that we got while we were at GP Mini. And we did this on the last episode as well that we recorded at GP Minneapolis. Brian, you are holding the swag at your home post office. I don't think you took it on vacation with you. What's the GP Mini spoils that we're putting up tonight in the raffle?
One of the great things about the current GP is that when you play in side events, you get these great little GP promo basic lands, and the foils are done really, really well. The artwork on them is phenomenal. And then it just says that the watermark, instead of having like a symbol, it just says Grand Prix on it. And they're very, very desirable. Well, with the prize ticks that we had from GP, we were able to purchase a few of these land packs that has one of each basic land type. So that is what you will be receiving in the mail. I will have one of each basic land type in a sealed little plastic cellophane thing, completely near mint, straight from GP Minneapolis to your hot little hands.
Yeah, these are very cool. They replace the mana symbol with the GP logo. It really gives it a standout look. So hopefully you'll love it. Matt says we've got 42 eligibles. He's got the list in front of him. I've got the tryhards randomizer. And here we go. Let's hit the randomize button right here. 11. Matt, who do we have at 11?
Kevin McGrath. K Kevin McGrath. I believe Kevin's won once or twice before as well.
I think Kevin's been with us a long time. Congratulations, Kevin. You'll be getting the GP Land Pack. Brian will ship it out as soon as he gets back from vacation this week. GP Land Packs. We've got a few more of these. We've also now got the autographed playmats after we were all in one location for the GP. So I have a sneaking suspicion one of those is going to get raffled off in the upcoming weeks to a month here on Tryhards. If you want to check it out, patreon.com/tryhards. The show is always free, will never be paywalled. But if you like it a little bit more, for each level that you're in at $5 or above, you get an entry into each Patreon raffle that we do. You can check it out, patreon.com/tryhards. Two standard tournaments this weekend. After the GP, in which you had Team Trios and Legacy was really surprisingly the focus of Wizards coverage, we swing back to standard this week. And it's a standard with a short shelf life as return to Ravnica. He's now on the horizon. And with it comes rotation. But Brian, Standard was still front and center in Brussels this weekend.
Standard was definitely front and center. 1,107 players showed up to play Standard in Brussels. And guys, when I was looking at the top eight, A was stacked with at least one Pro Tour Hall of Famer in Guillaume Wafotapa. But the current kind of Standard guru from across the pond, Jeremy Dezani, took it down with a blue-white approach deck. I was excited to see that deck took down this tournament, but I was also very excited to see how the metagame has shifted to be more modern-like, dare I say, with so many different archetypes featured in the top eight. We had Giordano Fagiolo's mostly red aggro, his title, not mine, Thomas Mekin's Turbo Fog in third place, Alex Gordon Brown's Sultai Midrange, Arnie Hoshenbeth on Esper Control. There were two Esper Control decks, also won by Guillaume Wafotapo. Nils Gutierrez Vinporat on Sultai Gift, a deck I wanted both of your opinions on coming up. And then the Greece captain of the national team, Panagiotis Papadopoulos on Red-Black Chain Whirler. It's interesting to note that there was one Red-Black Chain Whirler deck in the top eight, but that was the deck that had 78 copies, a full 32.5% conversion rate to day two. The next closest was Turbo Fog with 34 decks at 14.2%. And then you drop off there, Steel Leaf, Stompy, 9.6, and Esper Control at 7.9. So, guys, anything stand out to you in this top eight? Blue-white approach, taking it down, surprise you at all, Sean?
It doesn't, because if you follow metagames and look at what's anticipated, after all of the hubbub around Nexus of Fate coming out of the Pro Tour weekend, you knew that that was going to be a popular choice for top-tier players. They can get their hands on those cards. And a controlling strategy that looks to just snuff out your opponent's avenues to victory is something that they usually enjoy. So if you're going to play a game in which the red zone is going to be verboten, you need an alternate win condition. Now, I, of course, would have looked at Lich's Mastery, but that's not the way they decided to go. Instead, it was with more of a proven winner in Approach of the Second Sun. And I think if you saw this coming, that it was going to be a Bant Fog metagame. And Approach is also good against aggressive decks if you can stabilize and start to turn the corner. It really locks them out by asking them to do a totality of damage that they're not ready to do at that point in the game. And it's eminently splashable with only needing the one white. So the blue-black mid-range decks can now easily start to splash this. You don't have to go full Esper. Of course, we saw it paired with Teferi, and that guy just continues to impress no matter what format that it is. So if you were looking the next level, the expected game of the Fog Turns deck, I think that Approach makes a ton of sense this weekend, and I wasn't surprised to see it do well, and we're going to talk about it again in the Orlando GP, Matt.
Everyone made such a big hubbub about that Turbo Fog deck. The easy red card is Insult to Injury. It doesn't negate the deck, but it makes it very difficult for it to win. Brian, you mentioned, you know, we want to talk about the bug, God Pharaoh's Gift. So I think the real breakout card there is obviously the Stitcher Servant. And I think if I remember correctly, we've talked about it in the past. It's an amazing card. It's a great card that's not a rare. And it's having a large impact upon all the formats. This is getting close to the last hurrah of God Pharaoh's Gift. But I'm glad to see that it kind of comes in and out of the format, even with all the Braids running around. When I was playing it, Braid was obviously a problem, but it wasn't game-ending by any means. A Braid's still around, but the metagame completely changes up here in the next what, month and a half or so. And so I'm actually excited to see the new metagame. But Approach to the Second Sun with Teferi is kind of a nightmare to deal with. I've played against it multiple times, and I'm not super happy with that interaction because it's just kind of like an inevitable death. I mean, you have to be playing extremely suboptimal cards to actually like mill it off the top or something like that. Like if Stitcher Servant said target player, maybe it'd be too powerful. I'm not sure, but you know, that would help a lot. But there's really not a lot of like target player mills, and you know they're gonna have the counter spell for when you get into that counter war anyways. Yeah, between that and the blue enchantment that flips into a land search for a Skanta, I mean the blue white approach deck is very strong, but I'll be glad to see it go.
Matt, you said something interesting a while ago. And you just said the phrase, playing substandard cards. You were worried that Goblin Chain Whirler needed to be banned because, as you said at the time, invalidated a complete suite of cards, anything with one toughness. If you've got Chain Whirler on the brain, I think that this Sultai God Pharaoh's Gift deck is genius. You look at the cards that it's playing. Minister of Inquiries. You have Wildgrowth Walker. You have Jade Light Ranger. You have Thrashing Brontodon. All of these cards have value as the game goes on, and they're not really an aggressive deck, the Sultai God Pharaoh's Gift deck. They're a value deck that wants to maybe turn into a combo deck, but all those cards have the same thing in common. They brick wall Chain Whirler. And so I think this deck was inspired this weekend. It gave you value if you can get the game into the right place against the Taking Turns deck, and it gives you black, so you have Duress and Doomfall and other ways to kind of fight with them, but it absolutely brick walls the aggro strategies. This is the deck that I was most intrigued by this weekend.
Yeah, the Sultai Gift deck, I think, with Sean, you mentioned the Merfolk Branchwalker, the one Jade Light Ranger, and Hostage Taker making kind of a return. You know, having a Hostage Taker is such a great card as a 2/3. What if it's a 4/4 zombie in addition to being able to take a creature off the battlefield? That's just amazing. So I think having 31 creatures in this deck, 4 Gate to the Afterlife and 2 God Pharaoh's Gifts, so strong against those aggro decks. And I think that looks like something that's, you know, just evolving in this metagame, even though we've got rotation coming up in less than 30 days.
Brian, I think you just pointed out something important, and that's that this is a 31 creature deck. This is a creature combo deck. This is not a God Pharaoh's Gift combo deck like the blue-white deck is. They are digging, trying to refurbish a God Pharaoh's Gift early and then go off with that value. This Sultai list is completely fine to play without God Pharaoh's Gift at any point and still win through the value that it assembles during the game. It just goes into overdrive turbo mode if it gets God Pharaoh's Gift. So it actually has two different play lines as opposed to the blue-white version, which I always have a hard time beating.
Since Wizard's Sight is kind of... I was actually looking at the wrong deck list because this doesn't have the Stitcher Supplier in it, which kind of shocks me. After looking at the deck list further and seeing that I was looking at the wrong one, you're right, Sean. This was built to play against a, you know, the Chain Whirler decks. And the one card that really surprises me, too, on how versatile it is from playing against it, and really it's two cards, but the one single one is the Merfolk Branchwalkers. I've seen that as a two drop in a ton of decks, and I think that's going to see a lot of play. And the second kind of card on that as well is the Jade Light Rangers. Even though they do have the one toughness, they're very resilient to the Chain Whirlers.
Hurley, I think you're absolutely right. It's one of those things, and Sean, I love what you said. It's a creature combo deck that can kind of win without God Pharaoh's Gift. It's a God Pharaoh's Gift deck without God Pharaoh's Gift being an essential part of the deck. And so kind of like Modern Humans, if you can just start jamming creatures to the board and they have to answer Thrashing Brontodon, they've got to answer Hostage Taker just on their own without any kind of combo. If they don't do that, it's going to be really, really hard to win. So, you know, as people are not playing Fumigate, not playing Settle the Wreckage, these are the kind of decks that are going to thrive.
That was the scene in Brussels this weekend. There was part two, even though Wizards didn't show it to us. Did you guys find that weird? There have been so many times that Wizards has done a European GP with video coverage and then joined a Western Hemisphere GP in progress afterwards. I thought this set up perfectly to do it, and they opted not to. That was a little bit surprising to me, Matt. What went down in Orlando?
992 players in good old Mickey Mouse land. It was taken down by Gabriel, and I'm going to guess his last name is Joglar or Yogler Blue White Approach of the Second Sun deck. Again, I'm going to be really, really happy when that deck rotates out. In our top eight, we had Grixis Midrange. They call it Mono Red Wizards, but there's really only like eight wizards in it. Blue White Approach deck, Esper Control, Red Black Aggro, Green Black Constrictor, Blue Black Midrange, and Grixis Midrange. So if you look at it from a larger view, a pretty diverse metagame, but this kind of is the issue with Standard right now is there's a lot of similar cards within a lot of these decks. Yes, you may go from black to or mono red to red black, but you're running a lot of these decks. If they're in the colors, they're running 80% of the same cards. How do we fix this? You think rotation is going to fix this where it's kind of, I wouldn't say it's a stale meta game, but it's just you're seeing the same cards over and over.
I think rotation takes care of a lot of that. It's interesting when you start to see innovation right before rotation, you're kind of saying, oh, well, if it only had a little bit more time to evolve, well, guess what? That's the game that we have. It's going to evolve based on, what players do, what pros have to do for, the pro tour and things of that nature, kind of like what we saw with the Turbo Fog deck, et cetera. But yeah, I think, there's so many cards in Standard. You can put them together in a myriad of different ways. Which are going to be the ones that rise to the top? Well, there's going to be a metagame, and then it's going to even out as people adjust to that and their sideboards adjust, et cetera. It's a constantly evolving landscape. And so, but I think it's just going to be, on R&D to keep doing what they do very, very well overall, which is give us a lot of different interactions that make for deck building in a lot of different avenues. You got to make sure control has tools, that aggro has tools, that midrange has tools, that combo has tools. And if something is found that's working, guess what? There better be something else in the metagame to balance it out, or it's going to be very, very stale. And I know that Wizards has not had the best track record over the last 18 months in this area, but you still give them the benefit of the doubt. And hopefully, some of them are wiping their brow saying, thank God that rotation is going to happen here at the end of September, because I do not want to go through that, what we had to do again. And I think that's just part of the game. You're going to have that, and hopefully we'll see a very dynamic metagame going into the fall of 2018.
I don't think we've ever done a cards we're glad to see rotate episode of Tryhards, but with this rotation coming up, because some cards overstayed their welcome, we may have to do that for the first time. And
That's a great idea.
I really like that. I mean, yeah.
I think I've got my top ones. Maybe not in order, but I know who's in the boat that I'm giving a Viking funeral to. I'm sending it out on the lake and shooting the flaming arrow at them as it's packed with cardboard that I don't want to see anymore. But with the metagame responding to changes and then the aggro players responding to the expected fog turns deck, you saw two things. You saw Flame of Keld rotated into some decks this weekend, and you saw Insult to Injury. Insult to Injury, Matt mentioned it earlier. This is the one that I really like because it overrides the play pattern for the fog decks that we see. The fog decks are really responsive to the fact that you can play things now with the attack trigger. Admiral's Order can be played. You've got sundry other things. So a lot of them are playing their fogs on your upkeep. And now Insult to Injury overrides that because they play their fog and it says damage can't be prevented. And in fact, if a source you control would deal damage, it deals double damage this turn. So now you're really taxing your opponent's mana base to not only fog, but then to come up with an answer to your permanence, because it's tough to fog and say, hold up, settle the wreckage, even if you have it in your deck at that point in the game where these fundamental turns will happen with aggro. So I thought this was really interesting. As you mentioned, Brian, it's metagame shift response in Standard. Metagame shift response. And even though we're dancing a faster dance here toward the end of the format, I still find it intriguing right now. It's just unfortunate that this is all precipitated by a card off the Standard reserve list.
Come on. Don't leave us hanging. Come on.
That's
real.
What I feel about it.
Sean, I'm going to counter that, let's call it the argument, with one thing. One card that wasn't in the Pro Tour at all, as far as in the, I think it was in top 32, but not top 16, and it's still more expensive than Nexus of Fate, and that's Nicol Bolas. Guess what? You just got another mythic out there. I'm a big proponent of this card was a mistake. I'd be a liar if I said it was a mistake. The way it was distributed was very feel bad. And
right. I think the actual card is fine.
Yeah. I'd be a liar if I said I didn't disagree, but you know, it's kind of like when the reserve list cards spike and people are like, oh, this is ridiculous. Speculators buying this out. Well, you're never going to buy a alpha giant growth anyways. You're just complaining because it's that much money now.
Rosewater shared with some people on his blog that there's actually more copies of Nexus of Fate out there than any other mythic rare. It's not really an issue of supply and demand. It's kind of like who has it. And so it's kind of like the supply is out there. It just has to get into the hands of the people who want it.
Yeah, and exactly. And there's somebody wrote a great article, and I kind of knew this, but I didn't explicitly like think about it this way. But the buying patterns of Magic players, a lot of casual players come into the store, buy their box, and then they never come back in the store again until a new set's released. I think that's where a lot of these are sitting, these Nexus of Fates. Mm-hmm. They're sitting with these players who they play with their friends on, you know, Thursday nights, and that's it. You know, they're like, oh, I've got this sweet card. Check this out. They never know it's a $40 or $50 card.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We can never underestimate the amount of people who care nothing about the finance of Magic. You know, they could be sitting on Foil Goblin Guide or Goblin Lores and have no idea what they're worth, you know, on their bulk box, things of that nature. And that's fine. That's totally fine. That is a criticism that I will give you, Hurley, that Wizards didn't really roll this out. But if this card hadn't been broken in a very, very popular and very effective deck on the Pro Tour, would we be having this conversation? No. It takes a pro to do that. And so now everybody's clamoring about it and kind of throwing shade their way. We did not hear this same thing for Firesong and Sunspeaker, which was the foil promo for Dominaria, which is a cool card, great, you know, idea, but it didn't have a deck that it went into, and so it's just kind of faded into that $5 to $7 range because it's a cool card, but there's not a whole lot of demand for it.
It'll be interesting to see where Wizards goes from here and how they handle this. I think the other thing that's sort of propping up this argument is that Nexus of Fate didn't show up as a value play in a control deck where you have one of. They went right for the throat and used four of in the deck that suddenly caught fire. It's the hot tech. People love playing the hot tech in Magic. Does that mean it's a good deck? Maybe. Is it going to stick around for a long time? Probably not. So we'll see where this goes from here. And if Wizards takes a different approach the next couple of times, they end up with the buy a box promo. That's the tournaments that were this weekend. Coming up this weekend, guys, GPs, LA, and Providence. Both are standard again. SCG picks up their tour with Team Trios in Dallas. And I know that if you guys weren't as busy as you are, this would be the next Tryhards outing. Eternal Weekend, Japan is this weekend. Yep. So we'll be looking at the tech from that coming up next week. Should be interesting to see what the Japanese players do with the Legacy format. Vintage too, but we're not qualified to comment on that category here on Tryhards. That brings us up to the news this week. I am not much of a prognosticator when it comes to Magic races in the Player of the Year department. And there are so many moving pieces that it's almost not worth trying to predict. I just want to point out the fact that coming up toward Worlds, we have a very interesting three-legged race for Player of the Year this year. Seth Manfield, currently in first place with 79 points. Reed Duke in second place with 78. And Luis Salvato in third place with 76. Now, because of the way they weigh GP results and you can take this many good finishes and so on, from what I've read, Salvato actually has better than a puncher's chance to win this because of how many, quote, events he has left to try and spike a great result in and leap ahead of both Duke and Manfield. So it should be interesting between those three for the Player of the Year race coming up this year. October 5th, guys, we have the introduction of a new product, a new intro, sort of learn-to-play, pre-packaged Magic offering called Spell Slinger. It's a starter kit. It gives you two pre-constructed decks and the instructions on how to play the game. Let's just hope it's come further than the four-point print black-and-white little book that Brian and I got when we started to teach ourselves how to play the game, and they've actually someone to show you this in a rational fashion, because it is an enormously complicated game. I mean, chess looks remedial compared to all the rules and the things going on when you're trying to teach someone to play Magic. Have you guys watched the Spellslingers series done by Geek and Sundry with Sean Day 9 Plots? Either one of you, are you familiar with what I talk about?
No, I am not. I am a newbie. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. Matthew?
I feel like that was sarcasm, but yes, I've watched quite a bit of it because they have a lot of people on there that are definitely part of nerd culture, but you wouldn't expect them to be on a YouTube show that is playing Magic the Gathering.
I believe Sean's line that I will steal from him is Spellslingers, or I play Magic with my nerd friends. And it is a fantastic concept for a show, especially one that's designed to introduce players to the game of Magic. Now, I would be shocked if there wasn't a tie-in between the Spellslinger kit and the Spellslinger show, the show that coincidentally leads off with, this is paid promotional content brought to you by Wizards of the Coast. So we think that there's actually some relationship there. Is this a good idea? I think it's a great idea, especially if they take an episode and actually play the decks on Spellslingers, because you could actually include a link to it in the little promotional card that you would get in the deck. Now, since you're both familiar with the Spellslingers video series, I want to take just a moment because I watched the last episode that it came out, and it was fine. It was one of their better ones, but I believe they're on season 4 right now. Here's my complaint. Ever since I believe they had LSV on in season 2 and Chris Cluey on in, I believe, season 2 as well, the amount of times that they've had actual interesting gameplay are...
zero.
And it took us a while to count that high. So here's my suggestion. Sean does a great job with hosting it, and they give you a great feel for the game. He's got great energy. And I understand that they want to approach a new or learning to play crowd. So with each season, you start episode 1, the beginning, and you have someone on who's never played Magic before, and you use a product like this. And then as you move through the season, episodes 1 through, let's say, 10 for easy math, you scale up the difficulty and interest and skill level of your opponent with each episode. So at episode 1, you have somebody who's brand new to the game, and then episode 10... You bring on a pro or somebody from the Magic, you know, of the playtest department, play design department. How cool would it be to see like Tom the Boss Ross on there with Sean Plott for like episode 10, the final boss? And you could kind of scale up. I think the show would lend itself to that, and you could do that 1 through 10 migration within each season so that players, new players and new people who have found the series and don't know about Magic wouldn't have to backtrack to like season 1, episode 1, take all of these incremental sort of self-flagellating steps to catch up with the series. I think it would be fascinating, Brian, to go on that journey from episode 1 to 10 on each season, and obviously you'd have different people on. This just got me off on a tangent, I know, with the introduction of the new product and the actual tie-in, but as we talk about ways to get new people into the game and get people involved in the game so that they become enfranchised players and they continue to pass on the culture, I don't think any idea is without merit when it comes to at least considering it. And hopefully something comes of this, because we've seen Wizards try a number of avenues in recent years.
Couldn't agree with you more. The show is fun. It's kind of homey. It's got a lot of different characters that you can kind of relate to. It's relaxed, et cetera. It's funny. I really think that idea would fly. If you had some experts in there, you had some people giving some history of the game, you know, getting into some of the really intricate combat tricks and some of the details that happen in, like, you know, Legacy, like Storm versus Miracles and, you know, Miracles versus pretty much any deck a la 2-3 years ago would be pretty cool on there. So, yeah, your idea of having multiple guests of different skill levels kind of from the Magic community seems really, really cool. But to have that be something that's built in so you wouldn't have to kind of go back. Everybody who's read, you know, a big series or knows of somebody who's like on book 9 of, you know, Robert Jordan series or something, is kind of like, oh, yeah, that just seems like a whole big job. Well, even watching the first 3 seasons of Spellslingers can seem like a job to somebody. So make it accessible all the time. I think that's a great idea, Sean. Hurley, are you in favor of that? Are you going to have your moment in the sun on Spellslingers this coming up season here?
I would be like the level 2 boss out of 50, but you know, yeah, my only complaint about the product right now is the complaint I have about Magic in general is their marketing. It says Spellslinger Starter Kit. I understand that. Until somebody who has no idea what it is can walk up and say, this is what I need to buy, then you're failing. So even if it's if they had a little banner on the bottom and said, like, Magic for the Beginner, or they had banners at Walmart, because these are going into mass market stores, they should have kept the, you know, the basic advanced and expert levels when they had back in, like, 6th, 7th, and 8th edition, I think it was. You know, nowhere does it say, hey, this is what you buy somebody who's never played Magic but might be interested type of thing. So that's really my only complaint about it. I think it's really cool. The other, I'm not going to call it a complaint about the product, but the other thing is I hope it includes, you know, like you said, Sean, like a QR code or something that they could scan, and then they go to, you know, it goes to YouTube. And then you could see, like, Spellslinger, here's your introduction. Oh, you want to watch more Spellslinger? Well, then go to this video and then, you know, play off what you're kind of going with, Sean. Are they going to do that? I mean, I hope so. I'm crossing my fingers, but I'm not exactly sure that they're actually going to do that. It'd be really nice, you know, if they had like an app they could advertise. I hope they advertise Arena in here. But again, I mean, this is a easy way to grab somebody and say, hey, this is what I need, $15, and it's two decks I can play.
I think Arena is a slam dunk, Matt, and you're onto that. Matt, you mentioned marketing, and there is a sort of grassroots push that another Hasbro property has been getting, I'll say, over the last 2 years or so. There has been a back to our gaming history movement where an entire crowd of adults who have either played the game previously when they were younger or have been introduced to it now have been very vocal about experiencing Dungeons and Dragons. This is another Hasbro property, and it's gotten a huge culture bump over the last 2 years, and it's really bubbling back up to top of mind for quite a bit of the gaming populace and other people who wouldn't have counted themselves as gamers really up to this point. You have hugely popular Hollywood types who have been involved in this now at the highest levels, who are having their games broadcast live and who are going on late night talk shows and talking about who's in their games and this sort of thing that have been going on for quite some time. Matt, is it time for Magic to maybe emulate that in a way? You want it to feel, okay, this is one of the words that has been co-opted by advertising, but it's appropriate to use in this setting, so I'm going to do it. You want it to feel organic. You don't want it to feel forced, and that you're jumping on to a bandwagon of success that another property that you own, that is owned by your parent company, is currently experiencing success with. But do you think Magic can kind of play the dastardly brother here and stroke their villain mustache and twirl it up at the corners and go, we need something kind of like what D&D is going through right now. How can we get this done? Because there are plenty of crossover stars. The first one that comes to mind, just because it's going to be easy to talk about because it's well-produced, is Cassius Marsh, the NFL linebacker, who's now a regular on game nights with Josh Lee Kwai. Now, he's been one of the few people who has kind of straddled that athletic background boundary into the gaming world. Hunter Pence, I've talked about before on the show, the multi-time All-Star who's still with the San Francisco Giants, from Houston Open and LGS there. He's not quite as in the public eye with it. Baseball just is a longer season. There's a lot more involved with that. But Matt, this is kind of the long way around to, does Magic need or could it benefit from some of this seemingly organic promotion that Dungeons & Dragons has really been enjoying over the last 24 or 18 months?
Yes. If you listen to any episode of the Tryhards, any of the listeners probably hear me harping about this. Yes. I don't know where that organic growth comes from. I think what needs to happen, and this is just my own kind of pie in the sky type of thing, is do some sniffing around these, you know, let's not necessarily call them the nerd communities, but do some sniffing around and see, hey, did you used to play Magic the Gathering, you know, to some, like, you know, B-level stars type of thing, or somebody who's recognizable? Oh, yeah, you know, I used to play back in the day. Oh, really? Oh, well, would you like to come be our guest of honor at this Grand Prix that is in your hometown? See if you're interested in coming back. that's the type of marketing they need. Now, how do they reach out to that? I don't know. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, I don't know how they kind of tap that well, but I guarantee you those wells exist. You get one or two, like I said, B levels that say, oh my gosh, I'm playing Magic. And then you get them to mention it once on your, some random show they're on or some podcast or something like that. And that's what you need. That's the organic growth you need. You can't force – this game is too complicated to force onto people. But I think that if you create brand awareness, you know, Stuck in Development Hell Magic Movie would be a great way to have that. I mean, it would be a great way to have that kind of organic growth, because people would be like, wait, that was a good movie. Cross my fingers at saying that. But wait, that was a good movie.
I know, that we were just using the Dungeons and Dragons parallel, but they had to rebound from the D&D movie to get to the place where they're at now.
I know, so. That was a hot. I actually watched that a couple weeks ago. I'm not gonna lie, on vacation, it was worse.
Wait. On vacation, you spent your own time to watch that movie?
Yeah, because I was working, and I was drinking bourbon, working and watching that. And I was is terrible.
Future episodes that we have to plan for right now. The Cards You're Glad to See Rotate episode. And then the next time that we have downtime, probably around the holidays, this is going to be a screen pitch. I'm sure that the Hollywood types would do this better, but we all need to write like a page or two of our Magic movie screenplay. And then we can like pitch it and act it out here on the podcast.
You know,
I cannot wait to do that, and I'm going to be hammered. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah, yes. I'm just saying that the growth there has to be organic. They've tried multiple Magic board games, and they just haven't found one that sticks.
Mm-hmm.
With the board game renaissance that's happening, I mean, look what FFG has done, Fantasy Flight Games has done with the Arkham Horror series. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but you've got 7 different IP properties that came from like the Cthulhu style, Arkham Horror, you know, like Lovecraftian, different things. And these are different board game families. And then they all fit into this Arkham Horror Lovecraftian universe. And they need to find just one hit there to say, okay, let's do this. And they can, and that's the seed that they can grow off of, but they can't seem to find it. And I think that I'm hoping that Arena really helps with that. I'm hoping they can that can be the seed that kind of gets that organic growth going.
Brian, you got any other ideas rolling around?
No, you guys kind of exhausted that one. I would echo Hurley's idea of the organic spark that has to happen. I'm not in favor of kind of all of the cross promotion, the board games with Magic, you know, trying to take Magic out of its realm of what it is and turning it into something else kind of in a paper format. I understand the E side of things that kind of has to happen, but turning Magic into something that it's not and still trying to keep it as Magic just doesn't work. Take the page from Dungeons and Dragons. There's a core essential element to this game that if you just stick with that core and you do it really, really well, people are going to come back to it.
And all this was kicked off by a new product coming out.
Spellslingers.
Yeah.
Spellslingers. Check it out.
It's marketing. That's what it's called, marketing.
Quite a while. It should be great. Speaking of marketing and responding to market pressure, Brian, you pointed out coming into the show tonight, Channel Fireball actually changed its, PTQ format and has made a further change based on player feedback. You've kind of been on top of this. What's going on? Because we're heading into that season.
It's interesting. They had said for the longest time, and we saw this up in Minneapolis, guys, that for whatever Grand Prix that they are hosting, whatever the main event of that Grand Prix is, there will be a PTQ, not a PPTQ, but an old style PTQ that will be held on the Sunday of the main event, and it will be the exact same format as the main event of said Grand Prix. So when we were in Minneapolis, the main event was a sealed. That's what the PTQ was. It was a sealed event. Well, coming up to Grand Prix Richmond here in September, in only about 3 weeks, the main event was Legacy. So therefore, that would follow that there would be a PTQ that was Legacy. And this was feeding into the Pro Tour return to Ravnica. Saw some posts from some very, very disgruntled players, a lot of whom are, pro level or have been pro level and are really upset. saying that Channel Fireball had changed this to a modern PTQ because of the popularity of modern. And there was a lot of pushback. People are saying, hey, why did I just, you know, spend more on a plane ticket to actually stay and play in the PTQ when it was advertised as a legacy PTQ? I don't have time to test modern. Why are you changing this 3 weeks out? Whole lot of pressure. Channel Fireball did the best thing it could possibly do. Not only did it restore the legacy PTQ to the Sunday, it actually said, because of the popularity of modern and what people want to do, we're going to actually add the PTQ in modern on Friday. So they just added a completely different event. And so the logistics for them to, you know, add that whole event with judging and, you know, prize support and everything else that has to happen, kudos to them for responding to market pressure. But that just goes to show that if somebody's not doing something correctly, as they promised, they've got to be called out on it. And that just shows that, you know, those who are responsible, and Channel Fireball is that person right now, they're going to make the changes. So kudos to them for making it right. I hope they don't make a boneheaded move like that in the future and they learn from their mistakes.
Yeah, kudos to you, Brian, for pointing that out and keeping us up to date as well here on Tryhards. Up to date. That's one thing you always need to be when you're investing your hard-earned money in cardboard. One man who strives to make sure that you have the very latest to do that, he's our own Matt Hurley. Matt, what's in the financial elevator tonight? We going up? We going down? We getting in? We getting out? I'm ready to push the buttons. Just tell us where we're going.
Rotation time, guys. You got to look at cards that are currently not played or you think will be. And I think a big one's going to be History of Benalia. That card is very powerful, less than $10 right now. Not a lot of value right now in Dominaria. And I think this card can easily be a $20, $25 mythic again. It's not a legendary enchantment, so it's going to see play as like a 3 of, maybe a 2 of, or definitely a 4 of. And you know, pick them up now, well less than $10.
This week's In the Elevator, History of Benalia. Matt, it sounded a lot like Rodney Dangerfield ordering drinks during back to school there. It's going to be a 3 of or a 2 of, or maybe just bring a 4 of until one of us passes out, then make it a 3 of.
I don't see a...
We'll keep going from there.
That you would only run like less than a 3 of is that card. Well, I mean, honestly, like I really don't.
And History of Benalia has bounced in and out of sideboards as well as an alternate way for blue-white to pick up percentage points in the post-board games going from a control strategy. So lots of play to History of Benalia. And I think there's some financial advantage to quite a few Dominaria cards as we head toward rotation. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. Brewmaster, what do you got for us this week all the way from a brew-happy state?
In the immortal words of Yogi Berra, it's like deja vu all over again. I have been pretty impressed with how people have been tuning these Nexus of Fate kind of take extra turns turbo fog decks. And I thought it was time to revisit a card from Rivals of Ixalan that just kind of adds to that ridiculous concept of taking an extra turn after this one. Timestream Navigator. It's a blue and one for a non-legendary creature, human pirate wizard. It is only a 1/1 with a send. If you control 10 or more permanents, you get the city's blessing for the rest of the game. And for the cost of 2 blue, 2 generic, and tap it, put Timestream Navigator on the bottom of its owner's library. Take an extra turn after this one. Activate this if you have the city's blessing. Guys, I cannot even imagine trying to brew with more taking turn stuff that goes in this Nexus of Fate deck. So I'm going to leave that up to you. Hurley, does this belong in this Nexus of Fate deck? And if not, where does it belong? 3 minutes to brew.
I really like this card. All the Ascend cards are actually secretly quite good. This one, being a 1/1 2 drop that you have to sink 4 mana into, I'm not sure where it goes. I think it probably goes into, if you want to be honest with you, a Wizards deck, a non-aggressive control Wizards deck or Pirate deck. I think if you can get this into like a Grixis Pirate deck that has like a board control, you're taking extra turns, a side bonus of playing Pirates, I like this card. Reminds me of Wayward Swordtooth. People look at that card and they're like, oh, that's crap. But I think it's late in the game, it's just a powerhouse. You can control the board. You don't really have any board wipes, unfortunately, at post-rotation. This is definitely a post-rotation deck. But this is one that I've had my eye on, especially as a mythic, because anything that says take an extra turn on it, especially a repeatable one like this, I think is extremely powerful.
Sean, what about you? Do you think that this taking an extra turn is its primary ability? Is that something that you want to build around? Or does this go into the trash heap for eternity?
Taking an extra turn better be the primary ability, because paying two for a 1/1 is not... I know I'd like to play Legacy, but that's really not on the list of things that I want to do. I actually also have had my eye on this post-rotation. If the Grixis deck continues to be a threat with Bolas, I think this could take the place of, and obviously it's going to be a different style deck, Glintsleeve Siphoner. Glintsleeve Siphoner, the 2/1 with Menace, gives you the energy, draws you extra cards. It gives your opponent something they need to respond to, because if those decks become slightly more controlling, because they won't have Glintsleeve Siphoner, they won't have most likely as good of a mana base, I think that Timestring Navigator could play into it as something that you could play alongside either Argol's Bloodfast or Search for Iskanta that gives you value down the road, and your opponent is going to want to respond to it before you get to its quote-unquote ultimate, which is to take that extra turn. So this is something I definitely have my eye on.
I definitely see that this could play a role if you just want to kind of super extra turn them out. Imagine casting Nexus of Fate with Timestream Navigator on the board. You take your extra turn, maybe a Timestream Navigator to take one after that, maybe a Karn's Temporal Sundering to, you know, exile a permanent, take an extra turn. I feel like, you know, ticking up Teferi and all that, if your opponent doesn't scoop, you're going to have to call a judge over for kind of like a mental health check at that point. So this just seems really, really fun. I love that angle. The Time Warp decks from Old Extended and kind of 1.5, as we say, were really, really fun. And if Magic can kind of lean in that direction, even after rotation, in any way, shape, or form, I just might have to invest in a standard deck to play again.
1.5. Brian making the callback. Time Stream Navigator, this week's 3 minutes to Brew here on Try Hards. What have you guys been into this week for Magic? What have you been doing to get better with the game lately? Brian, you're on vacation. We'll lead with you.
I am actually looking forward to getting back into it. I am going to play in a PPTQ this coming Saturday. It's Modern at the Shop in Galesburg, and cannot wait to take Mardu Pyromancer for a spin. There's been a lot of talk about what people are playing, and I think at this stage it's play the deck you know, play the deck you're interested in, and that's the one that I've had the most experience with over the last 6 months. So we're going to see how that goes. I'm obviously going to try to do a little bit of testing this week, Sean. You're sleeving up humans. Hurley, hope you can join us for that little Skype session so we can get a little bit of practice in, and I'd love to have your guys' inputs on some cardboard choices. And so as soon as I get back from vacation, not only with the start of the school year coming up, but my thoughts will be turning to Legacy. Excuse me, too Modern in the PPTQ this weekend.
All right, you just betrayed yourself. Your thoughts are always on Legacy.
It's always
fine. That's where they should be. I read a very good article this week, and this article is touching on something that we usually try to focus on here on Tryhards. Brian Gottlieb on Star City Games wrote an article called Stop Trusting the Top 8. Essentially, don't form your opinions around an entire metagame based on decks that just happen to win through a couple single elimination rounds. Look deeper. Look at what went out through the Swiss rounds. Look at conversion rates. Check it out. Brian Gottlieb's Stop Trusting the Top 8. Matt, what have you been doing with Magic to get better?
Playing a little bit of Magic Online, and honestly, I've been so busy with the job changeover since the beginning of July. I haven't done much gaming at all, not to the level I would like, other than going up to Minneapolis. I actually finally got my other two Noble Hierarchs, and I got the rest of the Vraska's Contempts I needed in the mail today. And so I'm going to definitely go down and start playing some Standard and trying to brew in like Modern. And I've got a Legacy deck I'm trying to brew as well, which isn't going very well, I will say that much. But no, there's actually a couple Legacy tournaments coming up, and I might be going to them. It's one of those. It's like, do I want to pay $30 to play Legacy with the prize pool sucks? Because it kind of does. But the answer is definitely leaning towards yes. I'm starting to try and brew and get a Modern deck hammered out, and getting a Standard deck kind of hammered out for pre-rotation, and then trying to find what I want to play post-rotation as well.
I'm just going to throw this out there right now. Runic Armasaur, right around $2. probably a good pickup before anybody else brews up anything with it.
Before they break it.
Can't believe that was not on 3 minutes to brew tonight. In the elevator. Just cannot believe it.
I'm not that big of a troll. Come on, guys.
You brave soul. Thanks for hanging with us on this tour de force of marketing, runic armosaurs, time stream navigators, and history of banalias. We'll have a new chapter next week. We'll see you then on TryHard.